very grateful for all of God's mercy and grace that is represented in what you've heard. My wife and I have been married for 58 years. And the only reason for that is that I've been home only about 25. No, I'm joking, of course. I come to you this morning with great admiration and great thanksgiving to God. I admire the stance that your pastor and his wife took 8 years ago, and a number of you who were core people at that time with him, as one who left the church on the basis of principle. I know something of the trauma of that and the courage that it takes. So I have rejoiced in watching this church over these past 8 years and rejoiced at God's blessing upon you. It's a delight to see some of you who are old friends and others whom I've just met this morning and some I haven't met yet. Delight to be back in this area. Well, I want to speak on the subject, as you know, is God dead? And I make reference to Isaiah 43, verses 18 and 19. Forget the former things. Do not dwell on the past. See, I am doing a new thing. Now it springs up. Do you not perceive it? Anniversaries do dwell on the past, that which has happened. But God is a God of the future and a God of new things. And I want to direct your attention to the possibility of whatever the past has been, however glorious. God has an intention to do something new and something wonderful, whatever wonderful things have happened in the past. Is God dead? It's a good question. It's a legitimate question because some gods are dead. In the very next chapter, chapter 44, Isaiah chides the heathen over the fact that their gods, however well formed, are simply impotent gods. They're not alive. They have no power to do anything. But this God is a God who does something. Elijah took that position when he challenged the prophets of Baal. And he said, let's prove who is really God. And you know that competition on Mount Carmel, where he laughed at the impotent gods, the gods who don't do anything, who can't do anything, and said that my God does something. And indeed, Jehovah won that competition hands down, sent down fire from heaven, and under difficult circumstances, did the exceeding abundantly above all, not only consumed the sacrifice, but the stones and the earth, and acted magnificently, wonderfully, and made Elijah proud of the God whom he served. And so the living God is a God of action, a God who does something. The God is dead theory has quite a history behind it. It was proposed first in the latter half of the 19th century by a German philosopher by the name of Friedrich Nietzsche. And he took the position that if God existed, and he didn't dispute that, but if God existed, modern technology and modern civilization had become such that God was no longer necessary, and people had eliminated God and eliminated the need for God. And so he proposed theories that later on Adolf Hitler adopted, that there's a super race that is such that there is no longer need for God. Then he made a very telling statement, I think, and it's predicated upon this idea that God is dead. And he said, if God is dead, then what are these churches but tombs and mausoleums? Interesting statement, because some churches could remind you of that, and especially at an anniversary time. I have known of churches celebrating anniversaries of 100 years or more, and it looks like everybody was dead. Just a few there, usually, and celebrating the past. Nothing happening now, nothing anticipated for the future. If there was a God, he's gone. If there was a God in that situation, in that circumstance, he's no longer present, and the church is just a tomb. Well, I hope 100 years from now, and you won't be celebrating the anniversary, nor will I, but I hope that 100 years from now there will be life and activity and an awareness of the fact that God is omnipotent and he's alive and well and doing things. Now, if you are unsure of an entity, the way to prove its existence is by its activity. Some of you may know that I'm a beekeeper. And if you know anything about bees, you know that in every bee colony, there has to be a queen bee. And so it's essential to inspect the hive every once in a while, especially in early spring, to make sure that the queen has survived the winter and that the hive is in proper condition. Now, the only difficulty of recognizing a queen bee is that while it has some distinctive features, it's a little larger than the average worker, but somewhat the same size as a drone, which is larger too. But a drone is kind of stubby, and a queen bee has an elongated body. So it helps a little to distinguish the queen bee. But it's a bit of a task sometimes to pick the queen bee out of 50,000 bees. Some of them stacked in terms of numbers, and the queen can very often be buried underneath these bees. So it's been my experience to search and search and search for a queen bee and not find her. So when you can't find the queen bee, you look for her activity. And the activity of the queen bee, of course, it's the only bee in the hive that lays eggs. And so I look for the eggs. My eye is not yet trained to discern the eggs, but I can spot the larva, all right. And whenever I see larva there, I know that there's a queen in that hive, because this is the result. This is the productivity of the queen. Now, I've already stated that Elijah laid down those circumstances too, that the God who does something, who accomplishes something, who has power, whether or not you can see him, he's there on the basis of his actions. And we see by the scriptures that God, whether or not he exists at this present time, he certainly did exist in the past, because Isaiah says, don't consider the past activity of God, the opening up of the Red Sea, for instance, which only God can do. He said, forget the past things. But the very fact that there is a past indicates that at one time there was a God. And these are the signs of his existence. But don't dwell on that. Expect God to do something stunningly new something miraculously new. Expect God to, the God who delivered in the past, expect Him to make marvelous deliverance in the future. And He said, I will. I will level the mountains. I'll fill in the valleys. I'll make a way for my people. And so you can expect that. Regardless of what the past has been, expect new things. Now, let me suggest to you this morning that God does a new thing by His Word. On the basis of His Word. I rejoice in the fact that this church was established originally out of respect for the Word of God. When others had taken the position of Nietzsche, who has said that if there was a God, He's now dead, and so we are at liberty now to change things. We are at liberty to state that there are no absolutes. We're at liberty to change the Word. But God does a new thing by His Word. One sign that of which Isaiah speaks that testifies to the existence of a living God is the fact that He will prophesy. In the book of Isaiah and other books, you will see that God said. He indicates beforehand what He will do. The gods of the heathen can't do that. But Jehovah sets out a course, and it's recognizable because of His prophecies and His pronouncements. And so you see, in this chapter, Isaiah makes prophecies. He speaks about the fact that the Messiah will be a servant. Not a ruling king, as they expected, but a servant. He indicates that the time will come when God will pour out His Spirit upon all flesh. And he anticipates the day of Pentecost. A long way in the future, 800 years, Isaiah is writing, before the birth of Christ even. But the living God prophesies. And on the basis of His Word, we discover He has a program. And that is that Israel is to bless the whole world. Abraham enunciated that back in the book of Genesis. But that's the theme through the whole Word of God. We are not to live for ourselves. The church is not for Christians, primarily. The church is not to be comfortable. It's to be a servant. It's to suffer. It's to sacrifice. It's to give. It's to go. You'd be surprised how many evangelical Christians think that the pastor is supposed to minister to them, primarily, and to take care of their needs. And they will speak in a very selfish manner. I'm not being fed, or I'm not being cared for. And they've missed the whole point. The church is to be a blessing to the unsaved. The physician is not for the well, but for the sick. And the church is to be an outreaching thing. I trust that this church will be a missionary church. Not just supporting missionaries, not just sending missionaries, but being missionaries. That's our calling. That's in our name. So the church, we discover in the Word, is to bless the world. That's His program. His provision is Pentecost. I will pour out my Spirit upon all flesh, and you'll be active. You'll be prophesying. You'll be dreaming. And your children will be involved in all of this process. And then He gives His promise to be with the church always, all power, given unto me, and go therefore. I will be your provision as you minister the grace of God. So God does a new thing by His Word. Now secondly, God does a new thing by His workmen. When Jehovah was speaking to Moses at the time when Israel was in bondage to Egypt. He said, I have seen. This is the God who is alive. I have seen. I have heard. I have felt the anguish of the people. Now you go to Pharaoh. So this ministry of the church to the whole world is a cooperative thing. God will supply the provision. God will supply the power. And he'll provide the miracles. But the program moves forward by its workmen. So if you're not doing anything by way of outreach, either individually or corporately, then don't expect new things from God. God does new things through his workmen. He's unlikely to do new things if his people don't. And if his people don't, and God doesn't, then in fact, the observation of Nietzsche becomes a reality. The church becomes a tomb and a mausoleum. New things. The Lord led me a while back to do something new. I didn't realize what was happening at the time, and I can't take credit for the initiative of it. But I can, in retrospect, I can see that God was leading me out into a new ministry. Now, being retired, I have lots of time on my hands. And I came across a program called My Happy Planet. Some of you who have time in your hands may want to copy that down and get involved in it. And My Happy Planet is a language exchange program. I've always been interested in languages, and right now I'm working on about 15, one of which is Mandarin Chinese, Ni Hao Ma, and so on. And, I'm working on Arabic and Spanish and bringing up my French and Polish and a few other languages. So it's a language exchange program. And in exchange for you teaching English to people who want to learn English, they will teach you their language. So it's been an interesting experience. And much of the invitation I have received, many of the invitations I've received, have been from Chinese students, young people. When I posted my profile, I was 76 years old. And you put your age down, and you put down your interests, and put down a picture. And I say to myself, I will not get one invitation. Who's interested in somebody who's 76 years old? Well, I have been delightfully surprised. I have 139 people on my list, and I think maybe five I have approached, who didn't have anybody, so I thought maybe I'd encourage them. So I've approached about five, and all the rest have approached me. And I find that very interesting. But here, without trying to evangelize, and by the way, if you do this, you should know English. I mean, you should be fairly good in grammar. And it certainly smartened me up trying to help others in terms of grammar. And many of these people are Chinese. And without trying to evangelize, simply by teaching English, and on the basis of the profile, I have as a profile a picture, myself and two Haitian orphans. And a while back, a Roman Catholic priest from Madrid, Spain, said, who are the people with you in the picture? And so I got to tell him about going to Haiti and so on. That was a whole new idea to him, and he was quite surprised at it. And very often I get queries about that. Then I will say, I won't be able to help you for a while. I'm going to camp meeting. So I have Chinese students saying, well, what's camp meeting? And then one Chinese girl said, or rather a girl from India, said, I suppose preaching is talking about the Word of God. I said, yes, it is. And I sent her a simple sermon based on John 3:16. Well, on the basis of that casual approach, I know of at least three Chinese students who have become Christians. And I know a whole lot more who are interested in asking questions. Here's a letter from Monica, Chinese girl, about 21, 22 years old. I want to think about some important decisions in my life. The biggest one is about being a Christian. It is not easy for me. I have a big family, and they're all Muslim. It's not easy to convince my parents to allow me to be a Christian. And this is after she has believed, after she's trusted. I do believe in the Father, and that is the only belief for me in my life, since I chose to be a Christian. I will not give up. I do believe that if I believe there is a God, that God the Father will get me through this. It's my way to be reborn and to grow up. So I'm lucky that I could know you. I believe that this is kind of God's plan. Yeah, by the way, is Chinese for grandfather. Thank you for being a something or other, I can't read my own writing. A friend, I think it says, to me, and helping me a lot. Love, Monica. I think that's rather a miraculous thing. I think maybe that might be a new thing. I think that might be God at work. Here's a note from Chloe. I just had a note this morning from Monica, by the way. I've encouraged people from our church to write her. And she's just delighted to realize that there's a whole family of Christians. And they're concerned about her. Chloe, 19 years of age. She's Chinese. Thank you, Jim, for your profound explanation of the Bible. It really made me think a lot. And she goes on to say that she is a new King. I have a King James version of the Bible, but she's having trouble with the ancient language and so on. But because of my trying to help her, understanding the meaning of the second birth, as I understand it, is just like the transformation from a caterpillar to a butterfly. Now, that's not theologically correct, but that's her understanding of it. By that process, people can be rid of the physical boundaries and fly freely in the spiritual sky. This procedure is simple and short for some people, while for others it may take a lifetime to obtain salvation. I think that I may belong to the latter. I wonder sometimes what it will be like when we are summoned by God. Will he comfort us, give us warm encouragement like our fathers do? Can we really see him or feel his almighty power? Is it because I am not pure or innocent enough that I might not be saved? These questions have troubled me for a long time. In the meantime, I wrote her, and this is her response. It seems that I make things complicated. As long as I believe in Jesus, I will be saved. That is really a relief for me and has swept away my doubts. All by email. All by sitting in my own home. Didn't travel to China. Don't have to learn the Chinese language so eloquently that I have to minister in a foreign tongue. Just a marvelous thing. I will do a new thing. Sometimes your new thing doesn't have to be so complicated, so grand. My wife is a marvelous baker and cook. I show some of that effect. And when neighbors move in, I say to my wife, bake some muffins or some tarts or something, and I'll take them up to the neighbor. I did. One of our neighbors moved in, and I mentioned that to Lorraine one time, and the tarts didn't seem to appear for the, I forget what it was, but it was, what was it? Buns. Yeah. And I talked to her again about it, and she said, well, I made them, and you ate them. But we did finally get the buns there and got to meet our new neighbors. And we've been doing that, trying to do that up and down the concession where we lived, although it's difficult because some of them only come for a week. It's their weekend houses, and they live in the city. But it doesn't have to be a complicated thing. Now I don't have to worry about eating the buns. I take some honey. I say, just want to see what my neighbors look like, and thought you might enjoy some fresh honey. And all you have to do, it's a door opener. It's amazing what God will do when you knock on some doors and make some effort to reach out to your neighbors and your friends. So he does a new thing by his word. He does a new thing by his workmen. And then God does new things by his wonders. If the church will be active and will reach out in simple ways, God will provide the wonders and the miracles. I think these Chinese conversions are evidence of that. He's the one who will level the mountains and fill in the valleys. You don't have to worry about that. He'll do that. He'll make all the provisions that the church needs and that you as a Christian need. He'll do it contrary to that which seems logical. J.W. Haley was a Free Methodist missionary in Africa, and the Depression came. And the church said, we have to limit our ministries. And J.W. Haley heard God saying, go northward. And when the church would not support him and couldn't support him, J.W. Haley turned northward and established a work in the northern areas where he was working that is the largest conference in the whole denomination. The church said no. Logic said no. But God said, I'll perform wonders. And he did. Is God dead? By the look of some churches, you would say yes. I hope this won't be one of them. I hope that this will be a church where the heathen will say, God has done great things for them. The heathen will say. You know what I want to see in Blythe? I want to see something happen that will catch the attention of the editor of the Citizen, the newspaper. Now, I have an idea my good friend is a little biased against churches. I may be wrong in that. But Paul was able to say to Agrippa, you should know about these things, and I know you do, because this wasn't done in a corner. And I'm looking for the day when the Citizen will have to print amazing news about the church. About the church. Where it can't be ignored. Where God can't be ignored. But everything will testify to the fact that our God reigns.